Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about the movies that don't get talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we will be discussing the 2017 all-female directed horror anthology, XX. But first, let me introduce what's in the box, Donnie Nelson!
I don't know if I'm allowed to say anything because if I'm in the box, I'm dead. But
and the person most likely to be buried in a panda suit. Riley Maloney.
Hi, everyone.
All right. Well, that's done with.
Righteous.
So, Donnie, I believe you were just talking about the worst thing that you've seen this week.
The worst thing that I've seen this week?
Yes. What is it?
Let's say it was... Honestly, I want to talk about something. I'm going to make it a Wachowski doubleheader for my worst and best.
Oh boy.
I did watch...
You watched Speed Racer, didn't you?
No, Speed Racer is a better Wachowski movie. And I think we've had this argument before. But no, Jupiter Ascending is a worse movie than Speed Racer. Jupiter Ascending, although I would just like to maybe... kind of dig into the Wachowskis' brains a little bit more about what their decisions were on that movie. It is not a good movie. Eddie Redmayne gives the best performance of his entire career in it. However, it's not enough to save that movie. But Channing Tatum as a hover skating half wolf boy who
I have more in common with a common dog than I do with you.
And she's just like, ooh. And then it gets weird.
Ooh, fancy.
Yep.
Yeah.
They let me rollerblade away in the air.
It's so good, Jason. It's only
not.
Good in the fact that if you have something that you want to watch or just, like, put on as background noise, and every once in a while look over and go, like, what the fuck is... what is this movie? That is a good movie to watch because you don't have to pay attention too much.
I think the worst part about that movie is that it's like 3 hours long.
Yeah, it's very too long.
It's very, like you said, you can leave it on in the background because you will never ever quite understand exactly what's going on. So you can just check back in whenever you want and it'll be fine.
Yeah, and
you
just
be
like,
won't get it.
You just look back over and be like, oh, Sean Bean is in this movie. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he's half B, right?
He's half B. Yes, he's half B, and that's how the main character, it's part of the revelation of how she figures out that she is, like, royalty, is that queen, or that bees always know royalty.
So, obligatory sex joke, if he uses a stinger, does he die?
God only hopes so.
Well, it's Sean Bean, it's just a matter of time.
Oh, that's another sign of a not great movie. If Sean Bean's in it, he doesn't even die.
What? Oh, if he doesn't die? Okay, I was like, you take that back, Jason. Because
Sean Bean dies in lots of great things.
Uh-huh.
Almost every great thing he does.
First thing that comes to mind is James Bond, GoldenEye. Very good.
Riley, what's the worst thing that you've seen this week?
I think the worst thing that I've seen this week, and I think we kind of touched about it on... the last time I was here, but I watched Venom again, and I was reminded...
Why?
Yeah, how much I didn't like it. It was the most recent thing I watched when I went on vacation about a weekend ago, and one of my friends like, I've never seen it. I'm like, okay, good luck, see you later, and I ended up watching it with her, and again, reminded...
And you just wanted to ruin your vacation?
Oh my gosh, it was probably the low point. I'm like, I am actually just gonna go outside and throw myself in the lake, because... The only good thing about that movie, really, is the CGI to me. Like, the way that Venom...
He looks like Gak.
At least, like, when he comes out and, like, kind of covers his face, I'm like, oh, that's a cool effect. And then the effect is ruined because he talks, and then it's awful again.
Oh, Venom does?
Yeah. Not even, like, just the dialogue, the way the script's written, just... The only part that I liked was that they set up Carnage at the end, too, but even then,
yeah.
I'm like, this movie's still not good enough for me to think, oh, I want to see the next one. Though Venom 2 has been announced, I think, Andy Serkis is directing it?
Correct.
So.
You know, I mean, the nice part about Carnage is that at least we'll be able to tell which part of the blob fight at the end
exactly is who's
Venom
who, because
which part is Carnage.
Watch, they're going to make him just like a deep maroon and he'll blend right in the nighttime.
Yeah,
and
I was about
like,
to say,
eat my words.
The main reason why, Jason, I know you say that most of that film is bad. However, I'm pretty sure that fight scene would have been a lot more effective if it had been done at daytime. Daytime would be the main thing.
If it had been done in daytime and they had not both been black.
Yeah, they one of them could have been, like, there's a multitude of colors, like, make him, like, a neon green or something, and then actually have a slime tie-in.
There's so many alien colors.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Why did they both have to be the same color? You can't tell what's going on. Yeah. It's like watching the Transformers movies.
When they're all just tangled together, and even though they're distinct in their vehicle color, when they just get wrapped up in a big ball of metal, you can't.
You can't tell what's happening.
No. As long as it's directed by Michael Bay, then you can't understand. But if it's not directed by Michael Bay, the one Transformers film he hasn't done, then the action is comprehensible, or somehow, and like it's not just a bunch of metal being thrown around the screen. It's like, oh, these are actually two different characters.
And you're clear and distinct on when a robot actually dies and when a wound is fatal and when it's not fatal.
Yeah.
All right, so I went down a deep hole this week, and I watched Insidious for the first time.
Ooh.
And I thought that was going to be the worst thing that I watched this week, which in that case wouldn't have been a bad week. But then a little thing popped up on Netflix that was like, you should watch Ghost Ship.
Yes, you should, Jason.
And I did.
And you regret it.
It's pretty bad. It's not even fun bad. It's just bad.
Ghost Ship.
And it's one of those movies that's like an hour and 20 minutes long. But when you're watching, like, I swear that movie is 3 hours long. Like, oh, it is so long. It is so boring. Nothing about it makes any goddamn sense, because spoilers for Ghost Ship, but the end of it, you find out there's a demon on the ship, yet somehow they're able to shoot him with a shotgun and stab him with a lead pipe, and it does stuff. Like,
of course.
Turns out ghost demons are weak to shotgun blasts.
And lead pipes.
And lead pipes. Just lead pipes, though, not any other kind.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that scene got cut where they tried using a flamethrower.
And they're like, it's not working! Quick! Grab
get
the
shotgun!
Pipe.
Lead is always the answer.
Yeah, no, but it's full of stuff that was in like a lot of early 2000s movies, where there's like a lot of like fast zoom-ins, and there's a lot of really, really bad CGI, and there's a lot of nu metal music going on, while there's a lot of like fast cuts around the room. It was horrible. And I got even more bummed because I was like, there are a lot, like, Carl Urban's in it and Gabriel Byrne's in it. Like, there's quite a few good actors in this. Like, why did they sign on to be in this? And then I looked it up, and apparently, originally, it was supposed to be a movie about four people on a ship. And what happens is the ship breaks and is just, like, floating along. And then they all kind of go crazy and try to kill each other.
That seems like a better movie.
I was going to say, that idea sounds a lot better. Like, even hallucinating the demon and shooting him with the shotgun turns out to be your friend.
And then Joel Silver got brought on board and rewrote the script after everybody signed on. And now we have Ghost Ship. And it's soul-crushingly terrible.
Ghost Ship.
I kind of want to go watch it on Netflix now, just so I can.
You should not.
About it too.
I cannot be more clear on this point.
At least don't like give it only like 25% of your attention. Then, I think any movie is deserving of watching. It's just like, is it anywhere from a 0 to 100% paying attention to?
I would say skip like the first 30 minutes, and then if you're like,
except for that opening scene. The opening scene's okay.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. Watch like the first couple minutes where everybody dies with a wire.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
And then skip like 20 or 30 minutes, and then if what you're seeing entertains you, then I guess keep watching it.
But, all right, fair enough.
Otherwise, there's not a whole lot going on in that movie. At all.
Standard Blumhouse.
Which is unfortunate, because isn't Blumhouse the people that made Paranormal Activity, the first one?
Yes, I believe he was involved with that.
Okay.
They've kind of... They're involved with, like, every single horror movie.
Yeah, like, Insidious.
They're helping make Five Nights at Freddy's, too.
Most, yes.
Are they?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it's good.
Me too.
I hope Joel Silver's not involved. Otherwise, it'll turn into a movie about a guy locked into a toy factory with ghosts.
Yeah. I feel like Five Nights...
A Nazi treasure.
Yeah. Five Nights at Freddy's film has already been cannibalized by the new Child's Play film because...
Oh, yeah.
It is about an animatronic toy, like, essentially going haywire.
Yeah, as somebody who I will unashamedly admit that I love the Five Nights at Freddy's franchise, I know that movie is going to be... It's going to be good, hopefully, only to fans. But it's probably not going to be a good movie at all, so I can't wait till it comes out, and then I can complain about it the next time I'm on here and be like, you know what happened? It sucked. Everyone was right.
Yep.
Donnie, what's the best thing that you saw this week?
Okay, it's another Wachowski sisters joint.
I figured.
Their most prolific film, which would be the original Matrix, because Voodoo said I could get a free rental if I watched it with ads. So that's what I did. And so, sorry, name drop Voodoo. We're not sponsored by Voodoo. Walmart sucks. So, the original Matrix, it's okay. No, I watched it again, and there is, it's just a straight up good movie. It's just, the pacing is good, the world building is all there, like, all the characters are super likable. Some not as fleshed out as others, like Apoc and Switch and, like, Mouse. Mouse is just kind of this perverted, like, operator that, you know, just wants to, like, designs a woman in red, and that's the main reason. And he's just like, hey, Neo, did you see the woman in red? You want to say, I could set you up on a date with her, and be like, what the fuck? but, like, ultimately, all the characters have a place, and, like, just, like, really great performances from, like, Lawrence Fishburne, and, I mean, honestly, as much as, like, Keanu Reeves is fairly wooden as an actor, like, I don't know if I'd actually call him, like, a very good actor, but when he does the thing that he wants to do in the range that he has, like, I feel like that was a pretty good fit for him. Because I was kind of going through the list of, like, who they wanted before they actually got Keanu Reeves. And, like, the last person they were trying to get, which the Wachowskis wanted, but the studio pushed for Keanu Reeves, and I guess Keanu Reeves kind of won him over, was Johnny Depp. And I am so thankful that Johnny Depp never got that. Because we all hear about Will Smith, but we never hear about Johnny Depp was going to, like, really close to being Neo. I was like, that movie would have been completely tainted at this point. Because Keanu Reeves is just like, we're in the Keanu-sance, you know, the second Keanu-sance, as it were. And when they finally remake The Matrix, I'm going to be very sad. But you could probably look forward to the next three podcasts. I will either The Matrix, there will be a Matrix movie in either the best or the worst spot of the beginning of the podcast. And I'm going through the order. And you know what? I'm going to say something controversial right now. Reloaded, everyone says, is, like, okay, but not as good as the first one. Revolutions kind of sucks ass. It was not actually that long ago I watched Revolutions, and I thought it was okay. So, you guys suck. Also, watch Speed Racer.
You're wrong, so...
Also, watch Speed Racer.
Yeah, Speed Racer is, like, their unsung magnum opus. But that is the best thing I watched this week.
I watched Speed Racer one time, and it made me depressed.
It's because you don't like anime, Jason.
I do like anime.
You don't like anime, Jason.
Some of it.
Some of it.
You don't like anime, Jason.
What does not liking anime have to do with watching a live-action movie?
A live-action anime?
Live-action anime. That's exactly what it is. He's right. Have you ever seen Dragon Ball?
The movie?
Oh,
don't.
Dragon Ball
Let's
Evolution?
Not bring up Evolution. Please don't. That is not anime. That is...
No.
That's like...
horrific.
Yeah.
Chadwick Boseman's forehead vein.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not good. It's so big that he In one scene, he slides across the hood of a vehicle on his forehead. So
and doesn't get caught.
No, and doesn't get
beautiful.
Caught. Okay, I'm done. What's the best thing that you watched, Riley?
I was actually going to jump into speaking of anime. I recently watched My Hero Academia Two Heroes, and it's a tie-in movie they released after, I think it's the third season, but it takes place before the third season. Anyway, it was really good. I mean, they have a movie budget, so obviously the animation is phenomenal, but I loved the pacing, the story was good. Well, and My Hero's not known for being super overly cheesy, except for, like, the first, like, six episodes. And
yeah.
If you play a drink every time Deku cries game, you're going to be dead by the end of it. But just the movie itself, I liked the establishing the characters, and they get a little bit more backstory, but it's definitely canon, but you don't have to see it to understand any character depth or anything like that. But it's a really good feel good animated movie for those who really like anime. And also Dragon Ball Super Broly, I saw that recently too, and that was also just as good.
Yeah, I brought that up like, what was it, like two or three episodes ago, Jason?
Two episodes ago, yep.
It's okay.
You guys are a bunch of fucking nerds.
Heck yes, brother.
Yeah. I was gonna say, there's no denying it at this point, like it. I'm a weeb, what do you want from me?
Well, at one point, I am going to get Jason for us to do an episode on Perfect Blue, because we need to watch that movie, because it is maybe the best anime film of all time. Suck it, Akira!
Yeah.
Broly is my brother's favorite Dragon Ball character, because he is, quote, the beefiest, end quote.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, that you could TM that right there. Just trademark it, slap it on Broly's chest, and you're absolutely right.
100% beef.
100% beef.
Gross. I watched a film that made me cry this week, and it was The Farewell, which is the new movie starring Awkwafina, which is an actress I never thought capable of giving a performance that would make me cry. But lo and behold, here we are.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was really excited. I got to see The Farewell, and it went past all of my expectations. And it's getting a wider release this weekend, so if it's playing near you, I highly recommend you go check it out. It's funny. It's sad. It examines the philosophy and culture clashes of East versus West. I absolutely loved it, and I don't know, it's a serious contender for my favorite film of the year so far.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask.
I don't know, I want to watch it again, but I really, really liked it a lot. And I don't know. It's just great. I loved it. And especially after talking with the real Jace, who is back briefly from his time in Taiwan. He was telling me about how people over there are much more blunt about things. And he said that, for instance, if somebody thinks you're fat, they'll just like walk up to you and go, "You're fat." And that made me laugh, because when I was in the movie, when Awkwafina, who's spent most of her life in America, goes to see her grandma, who is dying, the first thing she says is, "You're so fat." And so, I don't know, it just made me think of that randomly during the movie. But yeah, The Farewell is getting a wider release this weekend, so I highly recommend people go watch it, because it was amazing, and one of the few films to elicit that strong of an emotional reaction from me. So, yeah.
Right on.
All right. So, let's get into XX. As far as I can tell, looking online, only one of these people is, like, an accomplished filmmaker. I think one of them's a model, and the other two were screenwriters.
I think one of them I was reading also like directs music videos.
Yep.
On the side. I don't know which one it was. I can't remember.
I don't remember. But... I don't remember at all. I just know that when I looked, I hadn't seen anything by either or by any of them.
You're talking about the directors?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Karen Kusawa, she's, I mean, she did The Girl Fight with Michelle Rodriguez, which I actually really liked. That was like her first movie. So she's been, and she just did Destroyer.
Oh, yeah, that's who I was talking about. Which segment did she do?
She did the very last one.
Her Only Living Son?
Yes.
Okay. That is what I thought. But the rest of them, I mean, one of them's a model. One of them, like Riley said, I think, did music videos. She was the only one that's like a legit... Not a legit filmmaker.
Legit, yeah, I was about to say. Don't diminish anybody.
But they're... She's the only one that does, like, feature-length movies for a living.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess let's just start at the top and work our way down.
Yeah.
Before we start talking about the actual segments, I just want to know what you guys' thoughts are on... Oh, and by the way, this is... I mean, should go without saying, we are... not going to worry about spoilers. This movie came out a couple years ago. It's on Netflix. If you really want to watch it, you can watch it. If you don't really want to watch it, then don't watch it.
Yeah, turn it off. Turn this podcast off, and then you can listen after you watch the movie.
And to be fair, these anthologies, there's nothing in them, I think, that we could even talk about that's going to ruin the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing in it where there's no big surprise twists. There's no... But they're still really good. That being said, I'm not trying to turn anybody off to this movie and being like, oh, I'm not going to watch it now if it's not mind-blowing. But they're really good anthologies and really good stories without having anything major plot twist, mind-blow, come out of left field elements to it. So just to warn everybody.
All right. So before we talk about the actual segments, my question to you guys is, what did you think of the framing device? Which is that weird little... stop motion clockwork house thing.
The lady house and the various dolls and the hand that collects things
and the bird
yes those are it's fine. I appreciate some nice stop motion animation. It is actually very good, and I don't know, slightly out of place because when it was all finally said and done, I don't think it made a whole bunch of sense. Like, they could have easily just not done it and then just went to, like, when one ended and then just went on. And then just, yep, title card, next one, go on from there. So, yeah. Like I said, I appreciated the animation, but, like, ultimately I think it didn't really do a whole bunch.
It seemed like it was an idea that either got introduced at the very beginning of writing all of these or the very end, and maybe had like a grander theme that was supposed to be incorporated, and then it got scrapped, but they didn't take that piece out. And like you said, I really appreciated it too, because it was kind of creepy and you know, it was a good way of moving along the storylines, but it seemed a little out of place.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, I feel like that has some... Donnie, your statement sums up what all three of us think, which is... that it looked good, and I enjoyed watching it, but I don't know that it was needed.
Yeah.
No, but so. Most things aren't.
That's fair.
Sorry, I'm a nihilist.
So, yeah. All right, let's get into the first segment, which is The Box. I don't know, Donnie, did you rewatch this before we did the podcast?
I did not. If I'm being completely honest with you... I do remember us having a brief conversation off mic about how I thought this was, like... I stopped watching it after this one, so I actually watched the rest of the movie when you brought it up that you wanted to do it for the podcast. And watching the rest of them, I think the first one's actually maybe the best, like, overall.
Well, that's interesting, because you really didn't seem to like the first one.
No, but, like, in the light of the other ones, like, it seems a lot more cohesive than the others.
Gotcha.
So, I didn't rewatch it, but I remembered it enough, which should probably be a testament to, like, like, how it was actually filmed and, like, the overall quality of it, because, like, it actually stuck in my brain. So that's something.
Yeah, so for anybody who needs a refresher, The Box is about this mom, and she brings her kids on the subway, and her kid sees a guy with a box, and he's like, hey, what's in the box? And then he shows the kid what's in the box, but you don't get to see what's in the box. And then he just stops eating. And then he tells his sister what's in the box later, and then she stops eating. And then he tells his dad what's in the box, and then and they all stop eating. And by the end of the movie, they have got some effects on them, and they look very, very creepy because they are all slowly starving to death. And then they all die.
And they all die, except for the mother, because the mother was never told.
Who spends the rest of her days just wandering the subway.
Looking for the old man.
Yeah, looking for the guy with the box. So, I really, really, like, this is the one that they open with, and I really, really liked it. I thought that it made, there's the scene where she dreams about her family eating her, and I thought that that was a really interesting commentary on motherhood.
Yeah.
As well as just a genuinely fucking creepy thing to see.
Well, when it, like Jason said, it's framed in this way where the family's eating her, but it's really focused on her emotional state, and she's happy because this takes place basically just before the rest of her family passes away, and she's reflecting on providing for them and wishing that they would eat, and she's even gotten to a point where it's like, I don't even care if this kills me. If they finally start to be better, then I'm happy. And agreed, it's just it's a commentary on, like, what mothers are supposed to do for their family, but, like, what makes them happy in providing for their family, too. But it's also really fucking creepy because she's torn apart. She's, you know, there's pieces of her missing because her family has eaten her literally alive. And
she's just sitting there smiling.
And she's smiling about it because they finally ate. And, yeah, creepy, but a little heartwarming at the same time. Kind of strange, but agreed. It was... Well, and this is my favorite segment of the anthology, too, just because it creeped me the hell out, like, watching a family starve to death with somebody who can't help them because they simply won't for whatever they learned was in the box. And for the rest of them to slowly wither away, like, that's horrifying to me. It gives me, like, goosebumps thinking about it because it's just helplessness all the way around. And that's, for me... the best and worst kind of horror when there's nothing you can do about it.
I know, and I think one of the most interesting things, too, is at the end when she's looking for the man with the box, she's not looking to, like, get revenge or anything. She's just trying to find him so that she can know what's in the box and she can join her family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I thought all that was really beautiful.
In a sadistic, horrible sort of way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Donnie?
Yes, I do remember, like I had said before, this was, like, underwhelming enough for me to stop watching it in the first place, and then in the context of the rest of the stuff that I watched, which I should not, that's not how I should be judging it, but it, watching the rest of the segments made me think about this segment in the way that, like, oh, these are less about maybe the actual, like, scare factor, or the quality, and more, what's the subtext of this? You know, mostly motherhood and, like, the need to want to take care of others, even if it's completely out of your control. And once you get more context to it and think about it a lot more, to a lesser extent with the other segments, but this is definitely the one that probably, I don't know, maybe hits home the most, I would think, with most people, that you can't actually, as much as you can, try to take care of the people close to you, that it's not always in your control, and at some point they make the decision and they kind of do what they want, or they're unable to care for themselves in a way that you care for them. And in that context, like, it definitely brightened up is maybe the wrong term to use, but definitely brought a little bit more understanding to the decisions made while making this segment, and that's why I kind of think it's the strongest of the four.
Okay.
So, after watching the rest of it, I'm like, oh no, this is the best. This is the best segment.
All right. I don't know if anybody else has anything else to say about the box.
What's in the box?
Yeah, it's bad. What definitely indeed? Got a 7 vibe from this segment.
Which is funny because this is based on a short story.
Yeah, it is. And even the short story doesn't offer answers because I was trying to read a little bit about this before I came over just to see if there was an answer to what was in the box. And even the director has gone on some interviews and won't tell the audience when they ask her, because it's really important to her to say that it's up to whoever is watching to decide what's in the box. Yeah. And it's that adds to the factor. But at the same time, I want my curiosity sated. I want to know.
That is a thing that mostly turned me off from it, because I was expecting like some big reveal at the end, which I shouldn't have. Like, I wasn't deserved that. But you know, I can totally see the whole point of the horror is that you will never know what's in the box, ever.
Yeah.
I do want to say that, like, I know that one of Donnie and I's favorite movies, which we should do an Adam Wingard movie, but. The Guest is a film that leaves a lot to the imagination.
Also a problem I had with that film, but like in retrospect, I actually appreciate it a lot because I'm like, because they had this whole thing apparently in deleted scenes where like they explain.
That's what I was about to bring up. Yeah, I was about to bring it up that they actually shot a lot of stuff, explaining a lot of the mystery away, and it tested really poorly.
Hmm.
And so instead of changing it, they just cut it all out, mm-hmm. which I thought was a pretty bold move, and in my opinion, paid off really well, because I really, really like that movie. That's one we should do for the show sometime.
Yep, if anybody needs to be sold on that movie, it's Captain America if he was psycho.
it's pretty great. Yeah, so I don't know. I tried to look it up because I was curious, and somebody who was in the test audience published on a blog like what was in the footage that got cut out of The Guest, and I read it and I was like, oh, this is stupid. I'm glad they didn't explain anything. And so I feel like it's one of those things where it's like no matter what would have been in the box, it wouldn't have been enough to make you. To make the answer worth it.
Well, and for a big reveal like that, most of the time you have to kind of have some either foreshadowing or background information throughout the film that, like, gives way to the reveal. Because obviously you can't just put something outrageous at the end and be like, whoa, that's amazing, because you're not going to think that.
Mm-hmm.
But that takes away from the short film aspect of it, because you can't fit that much detail without it just being an expositional dump and being boring. And so, as much as I wanted a reveal, like Donnie said, we weren't really deserved it because there's just not enough time and not enough context to do so. And it adds a little bit more horror to itself. What would you see in the box that would make you stop eating? Is it something gory? Is it something that just shatters your mind? Like, is it a demon? Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? What's in the box?
The Lords of Chaos.
Yeah. Just Rory.
It's Dead's head.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. It makes sense. Actually, now.
All right. Let's get into the birthday. Is it the birthday or the birthday party?
Birthday party.
Birthday party.
Doesn't it have like a really long title at the end?
Yeah. Too? Yes. It has a really long title.
The repressed memory of the child that. Yeah. It isn't entirely my mom's fault, but definitely why I fear intimacy. Like. Yep.
Well, I have the title right here if you want me to...
go ahead, please. Read
it. Okay, so the title, and this is revealed at the very end of it, The Birthday Party, or The Memory Lucy Suppressed from Her 7th Birthday That Wasn't Really Her Mom's Fault. Parentheses, even though her therapist says it's probably why she fears intimacy.
Oh, I love it.
And the birthday party is, for anybody who might have forgotten or whatever, birthday party is about a mom who finds her husband who... I was never totally clear on this. The first time I watched it, I thought that he committed suicide. And this time when I watched it, it just kind of seemed like he took some of her meds thinking they were something else and died on accident.
Yeah. Wasn't he also drinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just presented as dead, yep. quote unquote, to me. Like, in whatever way, shape, or form, he's just dead.
Yeah. So anyway, he's dead, and it's her daughter's birthday party, and she wants to make sure that her party is perfect. And so a lot of it is this weird comedy where she's just kind of carrying her husband's dead body around the house.
Mm-hmm. Hiding from them.
Yeah, trying to just barely get it out of frame before somebody else walks into the room. And then at the end, she dresses it up in a panda costume.
Yeah, oh, which a way, good cameo.
I was going to say, did you catch who it was?
Yeah, it's Joe Swanberg.
Joe Swanberg.
He's very good. His swoopy hair was the thing that got me the most. I was just like, what does this hair do?
Speaking of Adam Wingard, he's also in Your Next.
Yes, very good.
As a filmmaker. Anyway, so I don't remember. It doesn't matter. So she gets this panda costume, and she puts the panda costume on him, and then somebody accidentally bumps him, and he just kind of, like, falls on top of the cake, and then it's revealed that he's been dead the whole time.
Yeah, I thought there was something going on with that lady, that Carla lady, who is, like, essentially, like, a maid or something, or personal assistant. Yeah. I never really understood her relationship, but she's the one that bumps the body, and then she takes off the panda head, revealing the dead husband's... Well, the fact that he's dead.
Yeah. So, this one was less of... Oh, man, excuse me. This one was less of a horror story and more of a comedy. And I really... This one might be my favorite. Just because watching Melanie Lynskey drag a dead body around for 20 minutes is pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, I think if you can blend... It's an interesting take on the horror genre, because obviously it's not really creepy, there's no jump scares, there's no traditional horror element to it other than the morbidity of dragging a dead body around trying to hide it, which is absurd in its own right, but you kind of understand the thought process of if you just want to make sure, like, the shock not only of finding your husband dead on your child's birthday party, and you still want to make that birthday party good, what do? Well, you don't tell anyone that your husband died, and you just leave the body, I guess. But if you could, like, it's a nice blend of horror and comedy for me, which I think is a very interesting take on the genre.
Mm-hmm. I also, you know, just something to relate it back to kind of the first one, this is also a film about what you would do for your family.
Yeah.
As you said, it involves her just trying to hide the fact that her husband died. Although I would contradict you and say that there is genuine horror in this movie, because that neighbor is a fucking psychopath.
True. I forgot about that. You're right. Yeah.
If that's what my adult future beholds, I am not interested.
I'm done right now.
I will continue to live in cheap apartments for the rest of my life as long as I don't have to deal with people like that.
Yeah. Yes, neighborhoods, associations, and whatnot.
HOAs. The horror.
I think, honestly, the thing... Because, like, the whole movie I was just... Or the whole segment I was frustrated because I was just like, why are you making these bad decisions? You didn't murder him. What are you doing? But also then afterwards I was just like, oh, I know exactly what this is. It's something bad happens to you, some kind of trauma, and then you... something in your brain is not working right, and you keep on making these bad decisions and make it even worse. Because the thing that she should have done, and the thing that frustrated me is like, oh, you found your husband dead, it's his fault, sad thing, totally understandable, call 911, get this figured out. Yep. But, oh no, it's a birthday party, so something in her brain, the chemicals in her, like, they're all out of whack because of this, so she... instead of calling 911, she's just like, oh, I need to hide the body. Like, no.
We need to wait until tomorrow. It's a birthday party today.
Yeah. So that,
it's all because of that fucking neighbor.
Exactly.
God damn it.
And then everything seems like a do or die situation. And I think, honestly, that's like the main horror of this is the fact that like something bad has happened. And now what's every bad decision you could make from this point? It's almost like an exercise in almost like makes you relieved. Because if you don't see all the bad, because you can only really see bad decisions outside of yourself, and only in hindsight. So most of the time, or I at least got some relief from like, oh, I would never do something like this. But I have definitely been in situations where I have made a bad decision, or like had made a bad situation even worse because I was not thinking straight. So that is, yes, that is horror 101 in my brain.
Speaking as someone who's known you since high school, I can confirm that you have done that.
Yes.
Well, it's fine. A very human, I mean, like you said, we'd all look at this and be like, oh, I wouldn't do that. But at the same time, you can almost empathize with her and nearly put yourself in her shoes, like, understanding why she did. Because like you said, like, the chemicals in her brain, she's in shock, adrenaline, all of these things are culminating in a big mess inside of her head, and it's just forcing the wrong decision time after time after time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, all right. Good.
Well, I think I'm out of things to say about the birthday party.
Right on.
So let's move. Let's keep chugging right along to Don't Fall, which, quick recap, is about four friends who go camping, and then one of them turns into a Wendigo demon and murders the others.
Yes, they pay off somebody in like National Park to be able to go to this site that no one is ever allowed into, for like heritage site for no reason, no one should visit, and then they pay him off and go visit it, and then bad things happen.
Classic horror elements.
Classic horror. And the main character is Gretchen, who is unfortunately the one who turns into the Wendigo creature.
Yep.
Essentially it's like the other three people like picking on her the entire time. It's a very short amount of time because of the segment. And then and then honestly like kind of them reaping what they sowed in a way. This is actually the most fun segment for me because I was just like, yeah, people who like are just like kidding with you or like pick on you and say like, oh, I'm just messing with you. That's like the most frustrating thing in my day-to-day life. So like just be like, oh, you know, I could be like possessed by a weird Wendigo creature and then murder all of you because you pick on me, right? Just letting you know that.
Which is interesting because that immediately makes me think of, it's not a movie but a game for anyone who has ever played Until Dawn. It's literally the exact same sequence of actions that these two characters end up dead and one of them turns into a monster, all because of a quote-unquote prank by their friends. And they're like, oh, we're just kidding, it was just a joke. But in the end, not only did these two die and one turn into a monster, but potentially all the rest of them could be killed because of the choices that they made, which is, yeah, exactly the same in Don't Fall. And I agree with you entirely, Donnie. People who say that, oh, I'm just kidding, I'm just messing with you. Like, no, you don't have empathy and you're a jerk. You need to stop.
I think that because I constantly pull pranks on people, this one's my least favorite. Or that might be why this one's my least favorite.
Which one of the friends are you, Jason?
The douchiest.
Whatever one is the worst.
Super.
You're the know-it-all. I still enjoyed it. I thought that it was entertaining. I liked it.
The creature effects I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah,
gotta
she was
love a
fucking
good Wendigo.
Freaky.
Well, and to have like it go inside of her skin and just yeah.
Yeah, no, it was fun. But I think this one might be my least favorite out of all of them, just because they're like the, I don't know. I feel like the other ones all have a lot more going on. And this one is very much just a traditional horror story.
Yeah, like, I think good execution, just no meat to the story.
Yep.
There you go. All right, well, that wraps up Don't Fall.
And it's called Don't Fall because in the end she falls and breaks her leg.
Yep. Right? The girl that like pretend pushes Gretchen and yes. then like don't fall, and then she's the one that fall breaks her leg, and then a very yes. good creature like crawl down, and then the end.
Yep. Ta-da. You're dead.
Ta-da.
All right, so let's get into or onto her only living son, which is basically Rosemary's Baby fan fiction.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
I heard sequel, quote unquote.
And that's not a bad thing because I thought they did a really good job, and I mean it's certainly better than Rosemary's Baby too.
Yeah.
I don't know what I mean. It's
not that I've seen that movie, so I'm not going to judge right now, but...
Quick recap, I mean, it's about a kid who is, for any Big Mouth fans out there, he's going through changes, and he starts...
Yeah, that's a mild way of putting it, sure.
Yeah. Oh, that... I think the part in this... Okay, so he's like, growing horns. He's getting more violent. I think in, like, the opening scene, she finds a squirrel stabbed to a tree,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And it's implied that he did it.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't he called to the principal's office for pulling another kid's fingernails off?
Yep.
Yeah.
But he's also, like... I think, I believe, if I remember correctly, he's also, like, really smart, and he's, but then again, it seems like everyone around them is in this cult, so you don't really know who is being genuine and who is in this cult, and then at the end she confesses and basically recaps the plot of Rosemary's Baby, and tells him that he's turning into the son of Satan, and then they hug each other and then they die.
Yeah.
Yep, because Satan crushes them.
Yep, and that's the end. And this was another one that, like, the first time I watched this movie, I did not like I did not like Don't Fall or this segment. And this time through, I really enjoyed both of them. So I'm glad I watched it again. But I'm just curious, what did you guys think of this one?
I agree that it's definitely Rosemary's Baby fan fiction. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting just because, like, that kind of stuff really interests me, not only cults, but kind of, like, the idea of demonic possession or even being, mm-hmm. like, the son of Satan, just because there's a lot of religious takes on it in our culture today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just nice to see somebody kind of tackle it without it being overly religious in and of itself. Like, it's not pushing any kind of...
agenda.
Yeah, there's no agenda to it. There's no methodology attached. Well, I mean, it is the son of Satan, so I guess there is some, but...
I mean, it's anti-Satanism.
Yeah. But it's also... it's just a kind of refreshing in the sense that it's a good old Satan movie. you don't really see those too much anymore without it being just really, really over the top.
Yeah, like, let's remake The Omen the 7 millionth time.
Exactly. So
this time with Julia Donnie. Stiles.
Hey Donnie, do you think that their cult is called the Lords of Chaos?
The Lords of Chaos.
Yeah. I would appreciate it. I would honestly say that Lords of Chaos probably have more clout than no, that's not true at all. I'm sorry. Yeah, I hope so. If not, so I'd probably be the one to, like, I'd be the person in the cult be like, hey, guys, could we be the Lords of Chaos? And they're like, no, Donnie, leave. And I'm just like, you guys suck.
We've already told you 4 times we're not doing this.
We're the children of the devil.
I'm gonna join another cult. You guys suck.
Go take your anarchy somewhere else.
I'm gonna go hang out with the Mormons.
You guys don't even make the good Kool-Aid flavor. Come on.
They hand out juice boxes.
Oh, that'd be good.
All right, so I think the part of this one that creeped me out the most is when he's sitting on his bed, like, clipping his nails off.
Yeah.
And
was he clipping them, or, like, was it implied that it was, like, a pliers that he was going to rip them out.
Demon feet!
Demon feet!
Yeah, they were pliers, and he was just, like, yanking his claws off. Or talons, or whatever you call them.
Yeah.
His talons. His claws.
His demon feet.
It was very upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, when it comes down to just, wow, my brain just broke. So, like, the effects themselves are, like, they don't overdo it. They do a little, like, reverb on his voice and, like, also do, they, like, pretty much just his nails are the only things that, like, are actually, like, effects that show that he is the spawn of Satan. But, like, the thing I liked most about this, it was more in, like, hindsight, because I do think there's a very strong subtext to this that is not apparent in, or, like, maybe implied in Rosemary's Baby, but, like, isn't super apparent until you tell a story like this so long after the fact, is that, like, a kid doesn't have to be his father, And I think this is probably the one that attacks masculinity the most.
Down with the patriarchy!
I honestly think, yeah, this is probably the most, like socially charged of the segments, because it is, like, you can, like, ultimately, like, you have a really bad father, like, literally the worst. Like, not, like, by definition, the worst. And then...
Hashtag the worst.
The worst. And then you have, his mother, who is, like, understands, like, what happened, trying to do her best, trying to shield him from, like, where he comes from and, like, what he's becoming. And it ends with her telling him that she's not the one to make the choice for him, that he is the one ultimately. She provided this life for him, and at the end is ultimately his decision, and he chooses her instead of him, and then that's why they had to die. In that case, I think this is probably, yeah, the one that's probably the most political. Or the most, like I said, socially charged. And in that case, like, I totally get it. It definitely elevates the material a little bit more than if you were just looking at it without, like, any outside sources. So I do like it a lot. It's probably my second favorite out of them, out of the segments.
So before we get on to ranking these, which I feel like it's impossible to do, or not to do, with watching any type of anthology film... I also just want to quickly say that I thought the guy that played the mailman was creepy as fuck.
Yeah, he was very creepy.
I think there's just one background character in each of these anthologies that's not at all related to the horror, but you see them and you're like, you are the bad guy, and it turns out they're not. And you're just like,
well, he was a member of the cult, though.
True.
Yep.
So he actually was the bad guy, or one of them. All right, Donnie, what is worst to best? What's your ranking?
My ranking is, at number one is the box. Number two would be her only living son. Number three would be the birthday party. And then number four would be Don't Fall.
All right, Riley.
Not to... and solely copy, but that's basically my ranking too. The box was my absolute favorite, though I am kind of torn between Only Living Son and Birthday, just because Only Living Son I really liked because of the message it had, but I also really like the Birthday because, like I said, it's a nice interesting take on the switch up of the horror genre. So you could replace those in two and three, and then Don't Fall comes down to my final fourth pick, my least favorite.
Okay. Yeah, I think I mean anthologies just are, like, naturally like this. Like, you have
there's not gonna be all four where you're like, those were amazing. I mean, you could get one where all of them suck, but these don't all suck.
Mm-hmm. It's in the nature that, like, there's like four different directors who did these four different writers. They're like pretty much have no commonality besides just the fact that they are like women centric. I think this is like super clear cut. Like, there wasn't really a hard decision in ranking them. I don't know if you said you kind of had like between like her only living son and Birthday Party, you kind of had a toss up, but like, yeah, I just personally think that there's a little bit more. It's
like first and fourth place are
way well. Yes, they definitely have a lot of space between them. Yep, I know what you mean.
Yes, agreed.
Yep. Jason, what's your ranking?
So my favorite is The Birthday Party, and then Her Only Living Son, and then The Box, and then Don't Fall.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I can see that though. Like, there are a few moments in all of them where they would put it at the number one spot for me.
Yeah. Except for Don't Fall.
Except for Don't Fall. I mean, think we're all in
agreement. I don't know. That one's maybe the scariest.
But it is conventionally it's the most classic horror tropes throughout the entire thing.
It's the only slasher.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You get a mini slasher, a mini slider.
A mini slider and a mini slasher.
Yeah, it's a slider slasher. It's a slasher slider. It's number four. Can I get the number four?
Extra, you know, ketchup on the side.
Can I get some Arby's sauce? Okay, quote unquote Arby's sauce. Okay, we're not sponsored by Arby's. Sorry, I keep on bringing
hashtag not sponsored.
Yep,
I want to petition the YouTube channel that does the slasher icons as the Backstreet Boys to do like a fast food restaurant now.
Backstreet's back. All right.
Slash Street, that's what it's called.
Slash Street.
It's
oh my
not
gosh.
All right.
It's not all right.
I would love that. All right.
It has to exist.
So you can follow the show on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and depending on which person or which site you use, you'll talk to a different person. I do the Facebook, and Donnie does the Twitter, and Caitlin does the Instagram. And that's that.
I just show up.
Yeah, you bum.
Yep.
All right. Like to thank Dr. Tub Thumper for doing our music. And once again, encourage anybody who's able to find music by him under that name to send it to us, because we would love to hear it. Like to thank Pralix, who is on Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch with that name, for doing our artwork. And we'd like to thank Caitlin Industries, which is still me, because Caitlin has not earned her title yet. She's requested that I change the title or the name multiple times.
Yikes.
And I have said no, not until you start doing your damn job.
Well, it's Industries, so there's multiple people working under that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a LLC.
It's a machine.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can follow Donnie and I on Twitter on something we've said multiple times, as well as, oh, I forgot the other thing I was going to say.
Tumblr?
This is, what?
No.
Tumblr? Discord?
No.
No, F Discord.
No. Yeah. Damn you, Discord. Constantly opening as soon as I turn on my computer.
Yep, hate it.
Yeah, subscribe to our show and tell us what movies you want to hear us jabber on about. And that's the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
I didn't watch Source Code.